It's an art that deserves gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right.
Hey, good morning. This is KBOO Portland, your community radio station. A minute before 9 o'clock, and we're about an hour away from joining Chris Andre as she hosts Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Right after that, at 10:15, join us for Flashpoints, today featuring part two of a speech given recently by radical economist Richard Wolff. And the Electronic Intifada returns with its latest podcast, hosted by Noro Barrows-Friedman. At 11 today on Between the Covers, we speak with Diane Lebeck about her new novel, Breaking Wild. The story features two strong women characters, one lost in the woods of Colorado and the other obsessed with finding her. And at 11:30, the film show welcomes Ethiopian director Yared Zelecki, whose film Lamb is featured at the Cascade Festival of African Films. Festival coordinator Rana Neuenschwander provides a preview of the event, and filmmakers Lara Gallagher and Don Jones Redstone preview this year's POW Fest, where their films American Gladiators and Sista in the Neighborhood will be featured. That is all coming up, but first, it's an hour of Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch. The news you're not supposed to know is next.
Gaywoot Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition Qualifier Sunday, February 28th at D-Block Indoor Skate Park in Clackamas. There are three levels, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. Competition signups are available online at extremeamateurgames.com or on the day of the event at the park. Again, that's Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition Qualifier Sunday, February 28th at D-Block Indoor Skate Park, 8921 Southeast Jansen Road in Clackamas. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Good morning. This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, if you're listening to Democracy Now! Earlier, then you heard that a protester for Black Lives Matter has confronted Hillary Clinton with her own words, unfurling a sign saying, "We have to bring them to heel," quoting Ms. Clinton. Ashley Williams asked Clinton to apologize for supporting mass incarceration and for calling black teens super predators. Clinton, clearly taken aback, clearly peeved, then pretended that she was the one being denied a platform. And Williams was swiftly whisked away from a supporters' rally in South Carolina. Mostly white Clinton supporters hissed and called Williams rude. Williams said afterwards that she had personally paid $500 just to get a chance to get in there and ask the question of Clinton in person. And it's an interesting video to watch. And it's pretty clear Clinton didn't see this coming. And why didn't she see this coming? Interesting question. And so we'll see now if she'll follow up as she said and look into it. And I should think that an apology for supporting mass incarceration would be entirely appropriate. But anyway, there is a vicious racist police state that tops the globe in terms of killings and mass imprisonment, this pariah of the modern world. as of the latest official statistics from 2014, has 6,851,000 persons on probation, on parole, or in prison. Incredible, isn't it? Let me just say that again. 6,851,000. It's a mountain of misery, and its latest horror is the brutal arrest of persons who merely owe for their college loans. Yeah, it's called the United States of America, and if you're just starting to raise a family there, it must be particularly terrifying. Some people are just packing up and leaving, but most of us don't have the money to, so I suppose we're just going to have to stay and fight, huh? For the rest of us stuck here, here are the details from Campaign for America's Future. They sent an email to me. And to many, many people, I'm sure. Last week, they write, 7 deputy U.S. Marshals banged on the door of a freelance audio engineer. They were armed and positioned in case things got ugly. They didn't, thankfully. No one was hurt. The target was handcuffed and placed in a squad car. Who was this? A notorious kingpin? A violent criminal? No, this is all because he failed to pay $1,500 in overdue student loans. This wasn't an accident or an aberration. In Houston alone, there are 10 outstanding arrest warrants for unpaid college loans. Almost 2,000 loans are in default and could result in arrests. That's in one city. Contrast that, they write, to the world of Wall Street's masters of the universe, J.P. Morgan, Wachovia, Bank of America, and others violated sanctions against Iran, hid dirty money for drug dealers, defrauded home buyers, on their mortgages, and more. The banks were fined, cost of doing business. But the bankers responsible weren't indicted or arrested. They collected record bonuses. And they write, we bail out bankers that blow up the economy and arrest graduates who can't make their student debt payments. There's more to that. But I'll give you 3 guesses what the skin color was of the person who was arrested first. Since the revelation of the arrest, the corporate-owned press has come out with a list of excuses and euphemisms intended to blunt popular rage, and the story has kind of died out. But they are merely excuses. You know, he said he had a gun at some point in history. I don't know when. the cops came banging on his door and scared him. And these are excuses. The fact is, you know, and the big excuse is, oh, well, he wasn't arrested for owing on his student loans. He was arrested for failing to respond to a bench warrant. But the bench warrant was issued for failing to pay a student loan. So excuses are excuses. And the fact is, the debtor's prison of the 19th century are back. Run while you can. Which reminds me, the latest on the socialist candidate is that after tying one state up to the point of coin flips, losing one and winning one, he's supposed to be all washed up. But more on that coming up. And since I've mentioned student loans, I want to mention a couple more things. Because a lot of you listening to me right now owe student loans, and a lot of you are behind on them, and a lot of you are worried sick. So look, there are things you can do. First thing to do is to get onto the internet, find a search engine, and pull up income-driven repayment. Income-driven repayment. These are plans that make it easier for federal student loan borrowers to pay back loans if your debt is high compared to your income. They're based on your income, family size, the state you live in, and the federal student loan type. So you might qualify. Just pull up studentloans.gov and see what's in there. That does not mean that I think it's okay that the country, which frankly owes you an education, is charging you so damn much money for it and giving it to greedheads. I don't believe in paying student debt. I've been forced to pay mine. I paid $13,000 on a $2,000 debt. 20 years later, I suppose. And that's because they cornered me. They're about to garnish my wages. And I wish I knew then what I know now. There are ways to avoid it, and one of them is that income-driven repayment. Look that up, studentloans.gov, see what you can find out. Also, just use a search engine, income-driven repayment. The other thing to pull up in the more general category is the Debt Resistors Operations Manual. Remember that? Plug it into a search engine, the Debt Resistors Operations Manual. There are guerrilla things that you can do to keep the billionaires from ripping more money away from your family. For example, let's say you've just gotten a job and you're worried that when you file, you're going to your W-2 is going to become visible and the wage garnishment is going to come down for that student loans or something else. Well, you can delay that by simply delaying filing your income tax. Now, you can't do that indefinitely, But you can do it for a while and get away with it. People do. That gives you more time. There are many, many more tactics, which you can find in the debt resistor's operations manual. And generally speaking, I would say it is worthwhile to learn some of these techniques. And whenever you get a court notice of any sort, show up in court. Find out what you can. Ask what to say, what to do, what papers to fill out. You can find out. There are lawyers who will trade stuff, not just cash. You might be able to find a lawyer to help you. I have gone into court myself and stopped a big corporation cold trying to garnish my wages, and you can too. Debt resistor's operations manual, very important. Now, I've been talking about politics, but for a moment, the thing is, I've got an hour on this week's show, and I've been piling up some observations and commentary on global warming for a while, and I tend to put it towards the end of the show because there's always something else coming up. But this past January was warmer than any January that ever has been, and if that sounds familiar, it's because the last year was the warmest that ever has been, and the year before that, and you know what I'm saying. The climate crisis is extremely severe, and you need to know about it because I don't think that you can trust the corporations to do something about it. The climate accord in Paris meant nothing. There's no teeth to it. Nothing is going to happen. My personal Swami-like prediction, should I stop using Swami-like? Is that racist? It probably is. I apologize. My personal prediction is nothing will be done because when you don't have a signed contract with teeth in it for billionaires to move, billionaires don't move, because that's how they got to be billionaires, by gouging thousands of people at a time. Anyway, The Guardian has printed an article by Dana Nucitelli saying the Earth is warming 50 times faster than when it comes out of an ice age. And here's part of it. It says, recently The Guardian reported on a significant new study published in Nature Climate Change, finding that even if we meet our carbon reduction targets and stay below the 2-degree centigrade global warming threshold, and speaking for myself, ain't gonna happen, sea level rise will eventually inundate many major coastal cities around the world. 20% of the world's population will eventually have to migrate away from coasts swamped by rising oceans. Cities including New York, London, Rio, Cairo, Calcutta, Jakarta, Shanghai, all submerged. The authors looked at past climate change events and modeled simulations of the future. They found a clear, strong relationship between the total amount of carbon pollution humans emit and how far global sea levels will rise. The issue is that ice sheets melt quite slowly, but because carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for a long time, the eventual melting and associated sea level rise are effectively locked in. As a result, the study authors found that due to carbon pollution humans have emitted so far, we've committed the planet to an eventual sea level rise of 5.5 feet. If we stay within the 1 trillion ton carbon budget, which we hope will keep the planet below the 2 degrees centigrade warming above pre-industrial levels, sea levels will nevertheless rise a total of about 30 feet. If we continue on a fossil heavy fuel path, we would trigger a staggering eventual 165 feet of sea level rise. And once again, speaking for myself, I see these predictions, and I've been coming to this microphone on this issue since around 94, and I've seen the predictions increase and increase and increase. And from my non-scientific, just watching the information point of view, I wouldn't have guessed 20 years ago that right now things would be this bad. I don't think anyone did. And things are accelerating really out of hand, really quickly. There is evidence that global warming was on hold for a while, where because of strong trade wind activity, the heat was thrust into the ocean. That is now coming back. And now we're seeing an emergency, frankly. So skipping ahead on this article, right now, we're in a warm interglacial period, having come out of the last ice age, when New York City and Chicago were under an ice sheet about 12,000 years ago. During that transition, the Earth's average surface temperature warmed about 4 degrees centigrade, but that temperature rise occurred over a period of about 10,000 years. In contrast, humans have caused nearly 1 degree centigrade warming over the past 150 years, and we could trigger anywhere from another 1 to 4 degrees centigrade that's more in Fahrenheit, over the next 85 years, depending how much more carbon we pump into the atmosphere. What humans in the process of doing to the climate makes the transition out of the last ice age look like a casual stroll through the park. We're already warming the Earth about 20 times faster than during the ice age transition, and over the next century, that rate could increase to 50 times faster or more. So I am inviting your calls on these topics. Black Lives Matter, Clinton campaign, coverage of the Sanders campaign. I'll get to that in a minute. And global warming. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Returning to the article, as a result, the study authors found that due to carbon pollution, humans have emitted, I've already said that part, pardon me, that rapid climate destabilization is what climate scientists has climate scientists worried. It's faster than many species can adapt to, and therefore could cause widespread extinctions, among other dangerous climate change consequences. Coastal flooding in places like Florida has already become much more common than it was just 50 years ago, and sea level rise is expected to keep accelerating. Aaron Goldner, one of the Nature Climate Change study authors, told this author the next 10 to 20 years are critical in determining which path we follow, and she writes, there is a big difference between an eventual sea level rise of 1.7 meters and one of 9 meters. And this is followed by the usual paragraph that says, the sooner we transition away from fossil fuels and cut our carbon pollution, the better we'll be able to limit the climate destabilization and associated damages. It's a sobering thought. Our children, grandchildren, and future generations for hundreds, even thousands of years will feel the impact of the choices we make over the next decade, which is true enough. My quibble with it, and with that phrase and the idea that there is still something to be done, is that going back to the original point of this article, things are already out of control. And I don't think that the world's people, aside from people in the Arctic who can see it happening in a really extreme way, I don't think people realize just how bad it is. The surface of Greenland is melting. Greenland is steadily losing so much ice that there is a cold patch south of Greenland, a cold non-saline patch of meltwater, which is playing havoc with the climate and slowing down the thermohaline circulation. This particular impact was something I did not think would happen as quickly as it did. Once again, not that I have any scientific basis for saying yay or nay, but I'm surprised. But there it is. And that's really quite an emergency. The loss of Arctic sea ice is quite an emergency. The warming is going to create more frequent and more severe heating events during the summer, and that has been deadly. We haven't seen that since in Europe since 2003, but once again, now we know that that was due to a seeming pause while the heat was thrust down into the ocean. Here's another article from Rutgers University on EurekaAlert.org. Fish and other important resources are now moving towards the Earth poles as the climate warms, and the wealth is moving with them, according to a new paper by scientists at Rutgers, Princeton, Yale, and Arizona State Universities. Climate change is forcing some species of migrating fish to shift their range toward the poles, which means big changes for people whose livelihoods depend on those fish. And departing from this article and speaking for myself, there are anecdotes of fish expected to be in southern temperate or tropical zones coming up off the Oregon coast now, and this is due to global warming. According to this article, quoting Malin Pinsky, professor of ecology and evolution in the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences, what we find is that natural resources like fish are being pushed around by climate change, and that changes who gets access to them. The stronger and more conservation-oriented, that was the end of that quote, and the stronger and more conservation-oriented the natural resource management in a community, they write, the higher the value the community places on its natural resources, whether those resources are increasing or diminishing. If wealthier communities and countries are more likely to have a strong resource management, then these wealthy groups are more likely to benefit, thus exacerbating inequality. Once again, speaking for myself, this makes me think of the timber extraction here. But returning to the article, Pinsky and his co-authors have published their findings in the journal Nature Climate Change. Pinsky and his co-authors report that inclusive wealth, not just fish, but plants, trees, and other species important to human beings are shifting out of the temperate zones and toward the poles as global temperatures rise. Inclusive wealth is the sum of a community's capital assets, including natural assets like fish or trees, but also human health and education, as well as built assets like roads, buildings, or factories. Because climate changes unevenly from place to place, natural assets migrate or reproduce unevenly. So once again, you can find that on Eureka Alert, eurekaalert.org. And people are fighting back. Earth First Journal reports that Greenpeace activists have blocked the European Union and U.S. negotiators from holding secret talks in Brussels for a trade deal that would give multinational corporations unprecedented power. The protesters warned that the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership Agreement, TTIP, is a threat for democracy, environmental protection, health standards, and working conditions. Greenpeace calls for an immediate end to TTIP negotiations. 30 activists from 7 countries chained themselves at the entrances of a conference center where the meeting was due to take place. Speaking for myself, that reminds me of Seattle 99. Some activists, they write, climbed the front of the building to deploy a large banner depicting a dead-end road sign that read, TTIP Dead End Trade Deal. This is an article by Jennifer Baker of Revolution News, printed in Earth First. In the 2.5 years since TTIP talks began, negotiators have revealed very little about the negotiations while continuing to threaten environmental, health, and labor standards. There is no reason to believe that this round of talks will be any different. Greenpeace TTIP campaigner Susan Jehoram Cohen said, quote, "This trade deal is not about trade. It's about the transfer of power from people to big business." What the commission calls barriers to trade are in fact the safeguards that keep toxic pesticides out of our food and dangerous pollutants out of the air we breathe. The negotiators who were supposed to meet in secret today want to weaken these safeguards to maximize corporate profits, whatever the cost for society and the environment. It's our responsibility to expose them and give a voice to the millions who oppose this trade deal, end quote. Negotiators from the European Commission and the U.S. Trade Department were due to begin a 5-day-long round of talks on controversial plans to allow foreign investors to challenge rules and laws that protect people and nature, including on food, chemical pollution, and energy. The scheme favored by the commission, known as the investment court system, would give a new quasi-court jurisdiction over democratic states to defend the interests of investors. And if that sounds familiar, then it's the same sort of thing with the TPP, an unaccountable court to tell you whether you get to have your laws to protect you or not, and guess which side they're going to come down on. Secret, you don't get to have any say at all. The ICS would set up, they write, a privileged judicial system by allowing multinational corporations to bypass national courts to allow the ICS judges, who are not permanently assigned to the court, to also act as lawyers for corporate clients raising serious conflict of interest concerns, to allow preferential treatment for foreign companies over national and local businesses, to flout democratic principles and the right for governments to adopt and enforce laws, and will have a chilling effect on public authorities by discouraging them from adopting or enforcing standards in the public interest for fear of being challenged. I'm talking about the TTIP here, the latest thing to come down the pike. There's also a provision that each citizen of the United States making less than $120,000 per year will have to personally lick the boots of investors who come over from just making that up. The rest of it I'm not making up. Greenpeace EU legal counsel Andrea Carta added, the quote, "The commission's plan for a special court to protect corporate profits is a threat for democracy and the rule of law. It discriminates against local businesses and threatens the right of governments to adopt laws that are in the public interest. Multinational corporations are not above the law. The same rules should apply to them as to everyone else," end quote. And Earth First writes, "The aim of TTIP is to remove so-called barriers to trade between the EU and the US and to protect foreign investments above all else. With tariffs on transatlantic trade already very low, the focus of negotiations is on removing non-tariff barriers from laws and regulations in almost every sector of the economy, from farming to textiles and IT to banking. Concern about TTIP is growing and involves a wide spectrum of society, including non-governmental organizations, the health sector, and businesses, and millions have signed petitions and taken to the streets in defense of standards on food safety, toxic chemicals, healthcare, and workers' rights." So once again, that's from Earth First. Time is 9:23. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And been talking about climate change, been talking about the TTIP, been talking about the TPP, talking about billionaire rule, per usual. And at the top of the hour, I was also talking about Black Lives Matter confronting Hillary Clinton over the incarceration state, something I'm sure she'd rather not go on about right now. But we'll see whether she does or not. And so I invite your calls on these topics. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Christopher Host writes, and in these times, the main media narrative coming out of Saturday's Nevada caucus was clear. Hillary Clinton's got her inevitability back, and Bernie Sanders' campaign is toast. You can see it across a broad swath of the political spectrum from Salon to the Drudge Report. And Salon says, Hillary Clinton's path is clear. Barring catastrophe, her nomination is inevitable. To the Drudge Report saying, burnout. Hillary could end it all in 2 weeks. But Haas writes, if you put aside conjecture and speculation for a moment, there's really only one fact we can know for certain. Sanders currently trails Clinton by just a single pledged delegate. 51-52. Yes, it's true that including super delegates, a candidate needs to amass at least 2,383 total delegates in order to claim the Democratic nomination, but that's just another way of saying that you have to win by one. That's not how the media tends to talk about the nomination, but it's the framework to keep in mind as things unfold over the next few weeks and months, and it's a framework the campaigns themselves clearly understand. For all the talk of momentum, it's math that will determine the winner. And then Haas goes on to frame a narrow win scenario using what he thinks are probable vote counts. That's In These Times, Christopher Haas. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Why am I talking about Sanders? Because, as has been reported on KBOO and on Pacifica, the corporate-owned media has clearly been doing backflips to exclude coverage of Sanders and, of course, talk of socialism. Meanwhile, polls reveal 20% of Trump's South Carolina supporters disagree with the Emancipation Proclamation, and 70% want the Confederate flag back over the State House. They hate gays, too. So all the racists are over on that side. And, well, not all the racists, I'm sure. Salon.com's Sophia Tesfaye writes, Bernie Sanders finds himself in a familiar place once again. Far away from home on the campaign trail in South Carolina and Missouri on Wednesday, Sanders is once again fighting off a rush of pundits and political talkers looking to write off his presidential campaign after an upset in Nevada last weekend. But according to one new national poll, Sanders has only been growing more popular all month. Quoting Sanders, what I would ask of the media is not to look at it state by state. We're going to win some states. We're going to lose some states. Let's kind of look at the long-term thing. He said, look at the polls and state by state. You know what you're seeing. The gaps are narrowing, end quote. Clinton is still in the lead, but her lead is narrowing. Sanders said, arguing his campaign is still on the path to victory. In a new national poll from Reuters showing Sanders leading Hillary Clinton by 6 points among Democrats, his largest lead of the primary so far backs him up. According to the poll of 998 voters from across the country over 5 days released on Tuesday, Sanders has the support of 41.7% of Democrats compared to Clinton's 35.5%. And a Reuters ISPOS poll conducted earlier this month, immediately following the Iowa caucus, found Sanders had jumped from 30% support at the beginning of the year to 43%. All but vanquishing Clinton's commanding lead. Reuters also features the daily tracking feature, which illustrates that Sanders has led Clinton nationally for a majority of days in February. And skipping from that article, I looked at the Reuters poll for today. You can find it under politics, and there's another subcategory, and they have their polls, and it shows Sanders at 47.3 nationally and Clinton at 43.9. But the establishment and its superdelegates are overwhelmingly for Clinton. It's difficult for me to imagine that the Democratic Party would give in to democracy, but my interest lies mostly with the opportunity to spread the idea that maybe the society isn't really supposed to be for supporting the billionaire class. Maybe it's here to support most people and to create a better world. What do you think about that? Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Willow is on the air.
Right, it's Red Willow. But good morning. So I heard you talking about Trump, Therese, and I'm wondering if you saw in on social media or anywhere else where Donald Trump's dad was arrested in New York City in 1928 as part of a KKK rally.
No, I didn't know about that.
Okay. I just want to drop that. I put it out there. It looked to me like it was legit, but man, I got a couple of responses from whoever, and they were just very angry with me bringing that up. And then when I asked, well, is it a fact? Why are you so angry about this? I got no response. So,
well, Woody Guthrie pardon? Hated Trump's guts, and some of the lyrics of his songs refer to Trump because Guthrie lived in one of Trump's apartment buildings.
Really?
That's yes. Interesting. And Trump was fabulously rich from that sort of extraction, you know, and that gives me another chance to nail home my point that how do billionaires get rich? They steal thousands from millions. That's how you get billions.
And last 8 years has been about racism, in my opinion. I know this is a KKK. Donald Trump and all of the other people on that side of the aisle it's thinly veiled, but it's about racism.
They're not always thinly veiling it. I mean, when they put up pictures of Obama as a monkey and... the way they talk about immigrants. Yes, there is a hardcore of Trump supporters that are out and out racists. They're very angry people. One reason Trump is so dangerous is that he is just casually and cynically bringing these people in. And if he were to become the president, then they would certainly feel socially empowered, and all the blood would flow, as it always does whenever that sort of view is given encouragement. But you can't really exaggerate when the polls are taken, and 10% of the supporters are against the Emancipation Proclamation, for God's sake, and a great many more, demur on whether whites are superior or not. I don't want to say it, but yeah, they believe it. Yes, they're racist. Yes, he has a racist core. This is go ahead.
It's about racism, and you can't whitewash it, pardon the pun. The thing is, if we don't, these are people like John Birchers, like my grandmother used to say, John Birchers.
Whoops, the line went away. Well, okay. Well, Red Willow, if you want to continue that thought, just call back. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about the Debt Resistors Manual. I've been talking about student loans. I've been talking about Black Lives Matter. I've been talking about politics, Sanders being excluded. And now the latest thing is that since the press has had to talk about Sanders, they're now trying to say after a tie, a win, and a loss, he's washed up. That's it. 47 states don't matter. Stop thinking about Bernie Sanders. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. That is the message from the press. And 503-231-8187, and Roger is on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment on the fact that a lot of people who are disillusioned with the Democratic Party or are voting for lesser of two evils may have registered as unaffiliated or possibly members of the Independent Party, thinking that means they're unaffiliated. And when it comes time to primary, they won't be allowed to be able to vote. They might have gotten excited about Bernie Sanders, for instance, and want to go out and vote for him, and then find out that if they're registered as an unaffiliated voter, they're not actually eligible to vote in the primary, which could hurt Bernie Sanders. And I think that's true in many states, not just ours.
Yes, the rules change from state to state. There have been states already in which independents are allowed to vote in the Democratic primary. I think you're correct. I should look this up. I should know this, but I don't know. But I think you're right that in Oregon, you have to register for the Democratic Party to vote in the Democratic primary. And I have heard from people that and I've considered doing this myself. I considered signing up for the primary, holding my nose, signing up for the party in time to go for the primary so that I can... have my chance to vote yay or nay for socialism. Watch how I tread the line carefully for the FNCC. But that's coming up. And
a lot of people, this motor voter thing where you get registered automatically, they say 40% are registering as unaffiliated. And I think a lot of people might be duped into thinking the Independent Party means you're unaffiliated, but either way, you can't vote in the primary. The other thing, in response to Red Willa, I heard Jimmy Carter saying that he would prefer Trump over Cruz because Cruz is an ideologue and Trump is more malleable. He doesn't actually have any ideology, really. He's just, you know, spouting out at the mouth, whatever. And that, well, what does that mean? W is malleable, too. Anyway, I'll get off the air and let you continue with your wonderful show. Thank you.
Yeah, I was choosing amongst devils there, I'm sure. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I brought up debt, generally garnishment. I've been talking about what you can do to look after your family first when it comes to student loans or debt in general. The debt collectors being so monstrous and predatory these days, there is a thing called the Debt Resistors Manual. And in this case, resistor is spelled with an O-R. And you can find it that way if you look up Debt Resistors Manual on a search engine. And a great many very good suggestions there. Yes, there is hope. No, you don't necessarily have to go straight into garnishment. And I would love to talk about that with you. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Laura is on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hey, riding on the coattails of that, I was calling in just to kind of share about my own experience with student loan debt. I just graduated in December of 2015, and I went through a bachelor's program without a GI Bill or help from my parents, but managed to do it without taking out any loans.
Wow, you must be energetic.
I'm really tired now.
Yeah,
I'll bet. I did a research project that was really in-depth about a lot of this economic stuff when I first started college, and I kind of just inherently was suspicious of banking, and the more I dug, the more I found out, like, it's just pretend money that you're enslaved to for the rest of your life, and I wanted literally nothing to do with it, and so I tried to figure out how to go about avoiding that at all costs, and it's possible, but it's so hard, and it's really interesting because like the things that I figured out about how to do, you know, grant writing for myself and looking around for people who wanted to financially support my educational goals was a lot of work. And I was realizing through the whole process, no one else around me was really informed about this stuff, mostly because they hadn't, you know, taken the initiative for themselves. But the big part of that, the implication there is that it's not something that people are educated to do for themselves. Not something that people are shown as an option.
I would certainly agree that you should avoid the debt if you can. But, you know, there's a great deal of luck that goes along with that because you didn't break your foot or get a really severe flu and you were able to continue working.
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, tricky, difficulty things along the way. I think that it's like in both parts, it's like, you know, there was a lot of factors that went into making that even possible. And it just wasn't easy. But I feel like in a first world country, education is not something that should be putting any of us into, you know, a lifetime of debt or hardship and things like that.
I don't think this is really a first world country because in the civilized countries, they pay you to go to school. There's a stipend. There's a place for you to stay. They realize that there's a social interest in you completing your education to the extent possible. You're paid to do it. That's Austria, Denmark, France, Sweden, Norway, Finland. Many, many civilized countries do that, and the United States does not because we have this ideology that everyone must compete, and the more and more desperately you struggle, well, the better it is, and certainly it is better for billionaires.
Yeah, and I just think it's something that we need to be talking about because in 2008 we experienced this massive economic crash because of predatory lending, and student loans are certainly, I feel like, next on the list.
Well, and we have not recovered from that. You have President Obama getting on the horn and saying we have, because you can make numbers say that the United States has recovered. The stock market did, and although it's down a bit lately, and the very rich did. And if you add all that money together, you can pretend that the society benefited. It certainly did not. More extraction of wealth happened. Half of the United States is, frankly, on the edge of desperation or totally desperate.
I completely agree. I mean, the unemployment numbers may be down, but, you know, statistics are faulty and people are just off of the system and out of the statistics.
That's right.
Still unemployed.
They're bogus.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for letting me call in today and talk about my student loan process. and for talking to everybody on the air.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Been talking politics, also been talking nitty-gritty. You know, when I observe what happens in the political process between Clinton and Sanders, when people hear what Sanders is proposing and really hear it from him, as opposed to hearing the various warnings not to listen to it, what you hear is that he is suggesting that the entire nation move towards a more European-style economic model, which, although he says is socialist, is actually leaving capitalism in place and applying a few socialistic principles where it really counts. For example, single-payer health care and paid education. And I think any rational person would want that. I really do. Karen's on the air. Oh, excuse me. Kathleen is on the air. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Yeah, I like your show. So just want to comment briefly on Hillary Clinton and the presidential race. I think a lot of what Trump's doing and what they're allowing Trump to do is to be a very, you know, charismatic, eye-catching kind of individual. So it takes our attention off of other things that are really happening. And I agree with you that Bernie Sanders is a socialist, and I don't think that that's the way that America should be heading. I'm very concerned about Hillary Clinton. She's a very dangerous woman.
Why do you say that?
Well, just from the things that I know about what she's done in the past, her and Bill Clinton, and I think that the Zionists, the globalists, they have her. There's something they have about Hillary Clinton that if she gets to be president, it's only because she's being allowed to be president. And I'm kind of wondering if maybe somewhere down the line they're going to come out with something they've been holding against her that's going to come out that might just blow her. If I don't know, it's just a theory. Might blow her out of the water, and then President Obama will be able to do an executive order to hold himself back in place.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting to speculate these things. I was interested to see the debate, which was roundly criticized by the corporate press as being an error by Sanders when he brought up Kissinger. It's like, oh, who cares about that old stuff? When he brought up Kissinger, I was like, yes, now people will hear the truth and they will understand that Hillary is a very enthusiastic imperialist. And that's why I say she's dangerous, because I am afraid, given her actions, for example, with Victoria Nuland, her bestie, that she will lead us down the path much closer, as she already has done, towards nuclear war. I mean, for God's sake, we had Tupolev bombers off the coast just for the Russians trying to say, hello, we're still out here and we still have nuclear weapons and you can only go so far. She thinks that's great. It shows how tough she is.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if Hillary Clinton gets to be president, the first thing that's going to happen is all our weapons will be taken away, and our Second Amendment and more of our rights will be withered away. And she will probably lead us into the greatest war we've ever encountered. I think that there's a lot of enthusiasm towards unrest and non-peace and domination and control. And like I said, just one more thing, just everybody out there, it's unfortunate that we are being held powerless in this this journey towards getting our president in the United States. No matter what, if we get in there and we vote or we don't vote, it really isn't, I'm sorry to say, in my opinion, it's not really going to help anything, because the Zionists and the globalists, the elitists, these people that are so powerful, they have it pretty well under control, and we are just along for the ride.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, and that was an interesting call. I can tell that there are categories in which you and I sharply differ, but that's what makes a good call sometimes. Time is 9:43, and thanks very much for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Noah is on the air.
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to let you know that in the state of Oregon, to vote in the primary, you do have to be registered for a party. So if you're not registered for a party, then you don't get to vote in the primary. So someone else
that specific party. So you're saying you'd have to be registered for the Democratic Party to vote between Clinton and Sanders.
Exactly. If you wanted to vote for any candidate in the primary, you have to be registered for the party that they're running for, or you don't get to vote. You only get to vote in the general election.
All right.
So I just wanted to clarify that for everyone.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I'm thinking that is correct, and I should probably have looked that up so that I could be absolutely certain. But yeah, I think you're right. 944, number to call 503-231-8187, and Eric is on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Teresa. The Department of Revenue for the state of Oregon claims I owe them over $4,000. Most of those are fines and assessment, but in order to get the fines released, you have to pay the entire amount, and then they'll consider releasing the penalties.
That is something that would be worth talking to an attorney about, if you can possibly get one cornered long enough. I'd love to say something about it, but, you know, I can't even play an attorney on the radio. So.
Okay, thank you.
But it's worth looking into. It's worth, I know people think that you've got to have cash up front to talk to an attorney, but, you know, for that first 15 minutes, a lot of times you can find someone who is just willing to work with you, maybe trade something. Don't give up. See what you can do.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling in. Okay, so I've been talking about global warming. I've been giving out some of the details which alarm me, and I want to be a little more general about that. I feel a sense of alarm. I worry about the upcoming forest fire season. I hate that phrase, but you know, it's coming. We don't know what it's going to be. Will it dry out here? Will the heat be there? Will there be lightning strikes? Will this be the year that we lose a huge portion of forest, or will we get to skip another year? This is the sort of thing that right here, right now, affects us. And of course, droughts can happen. The atmosphere is obviously very roiled right now. There's a great deal of heat moving around, and it's moving in places where it normally isn't. That melting of the polar ice was truly severe. The appearance of a cold patch in the midst of overwarmed water in the Atlantic is just, you know, from the Greenland melting, is just a recipe for severe storms, and already has been. So without, you know, knowing more meteorological science, all I can say is it makes me nervous. And I think it should make you nervous. Also been talking about the political situation in which we have pundit after pundit, corporate-owned news media all over the place saying, oh, this is it. Sanders is over with. Stop thinking about Sanders. And obviously it's way too early to say that. And I could have predicted that they would have. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Harry is on the air.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, the first comment I have is one of your callers was mentioning the unemployment rate is down by 5%. But you have to remember the government only counts people who are getting unemployment benefits. That's 5%. Anybody else is not counted.
Yes, people who no longer qualify for them, people who have completely given up and dropped out of the economy, millions of people.
People who graduated from high school, they're not counted. People who graduated from college, they're not counted. So just if you have unemployment benefits, you're counted. Otherwise, you're not counted.
A third of the workforce.
Yeah.
A third of the workforce right now needs full-time, steady, good-paying work, and a third of the workforce doesn't have it.
Yeah. My next comment is about climate change. You mentioned that the last ice age ended 12,000 years ago. The ice age cycle or glacial cycle happens every 30,000 years. So technically, we're supposed to have 3,000 years of warming before we start cooling again. But what's happening is we're warming too fast because of human development that... that it's happening too quickly. Like they mentioned this this winter, a high pressure point actually went over the North Pole, and it pushed a low pressure down toward China. In fact, they had issues with in Taiwan was the first time they went, you know, under 30 degrees because that island's usually pretty warm, but and most of the houses aren't made with heat. There's no furnaces. So like 7 or 8 people actually froze to death in Taiwan.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of people, you know, trying to huddle next to stoves and, you know, trying to find winter gear when they had never needed it. Strange situation.
Yeah, so it's kind of going up. And also, I mean, like 1,000 years or 2,000 years from now, I mean, when they've done excavations around the Arctic Ocean up there, they found dinosaurs. So it's supposed to be warm up there. Eventually, you know, the Arctic Ocean will be ice-free, but yeah, 2,000 years from now, not right now. What's going on right now?
What's going on right now is downright frightening.
Yeah, it is, definitely. Well, that's my only comment. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And as you may have heard, tornadoes are striking early this year, devastating areas in the American South. Johnny is on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty well, thank you.
Good. Well, first of all, I'd just like to give some gratitude for all the volunteers and to KBOO and to yourself. Thank you for being on the air and bringing us some topics and things for us to talk about.
Hooray for community radio.
Yeah. I give it hurrah. So I have been really highly interested in climate change, global warming, whatever you want to call it, for quite some time, since the early 90s. Like we started, my friends and I, we're really nobodies. We're just laborers. We just work and play and party and have fun. But the type of work that we did consisted of being aware of the weather. And so we just thought, you know, like we were roofers, and so we always had to like pay attention to the weather. And we noticed year after year, it was just different all the time. It started getting more and more different. And they're like, "What's up, Johnny?" And I pulled something out of the ethers and I said, it's not global warming, it's climate change. And that was, you know, like a decade and a half ago. Well, since then, I've just been kind of like going on listening to like whatever comes out of the media. But lately, it's been really confusing because we don't really understand like the global temperature average and what it is now, what it has been in the last couple of decades, and like how fast it's rising. And, of course, all of the storms and the unique weather that we're having all over the world is somewhat alarming and not understandable. So I've been reading into it, and I've been doing some studying. And I kind of want to comment on what the last guy said. He was talking about the ice ages.
Uh-huh.
However, I get the sense, and from what I have learned in college and from what the research that I have done, is that we should be, and it doesn't matter about the time, like time has no like standing in, you know, like we can't really say, oh yeah, 100,000 years or 100 million, every 100 million years or so we have an ice age, you know, because it varies like thousands of years. And so, but if we look at the graph from ice core samples, we can see the graph shows that the Earth gets to a certain temperature, gets to a certain high temperature, and then drops off, and then goes down to a certain cold temperature, and then starts climbing again. Well, we're at that point where we have completely and totally surpassed the last 50,000 years of, or 500,000 years of high temperatures. We've completely surpassed that. So on the graph, what it looks like is that we should be diving down into an ice age. The temperature should be declining on the Earth. However, there's like three major things, or two major things, that are disrupting this process, and it's our carbon and greenhouse gases. So there's two different types. There's the particulate, and then there's the non-particulate, and they both act differently. The particulates keep the sunshine from coming in, and the methane and the other ones keep the sunshine from leaving. And so it was pointed out to me that after 9/11, there were 3 days of no jets, no particulate matter coming.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. And they found that, well, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, right. And then and the global temperature increased 3 days after that by a fraction of, well, a fraction.
What they found was that during the day, temperatures went up. During the night, temperatures dropped. Both both were quite sharp. And, of course, the reason is that the contrails are reflecting light during the day and holding it in at night very efficiently. And so that suggests a method of altering the current alteration that we're already doing, which would be to have contrail-producing flights only during the day and ban them at night, especially over the poles. I think that we are seeing experimentation with that, and I think we've seen experimentation with that. Actually, I've observed that over Portland.
Right.
So that sort of thing is now being taken into account, but apparently not publicly. That's a great point. Those are great points that you bring up, and it's kind of a long call, and I like to get more people on, so I will go to another caller. But thank you very much for calling in. These are terrific points.
One more thing, really quick, and that is that when the ice melts, it gets lighter, and it relieves pressure from the poles, and this changes our plate confluence, and so the plates start moving again.
You're right. It causes more earthquakes.
Yep.
Thanks very much. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Yeah, I like that call because this is kind of what I want to bring up right now. We're in the emergency. Naomi Klein's book and movie is This Changes Everything. What it means is we cannot go forward with our current model of supporting the elites under hypercapitalism because they don't have to care. I mean, even if there's the great methane burst and more oxygen is needed, well, the millionaires and billionaires are going to have all the oxygen they need, and you ain't getting a tank. And it comes right down to breathing in that scenario. That's very extreme, but I'm just using that as an example. The fish are moving north. Well, people in southern climes, too bad. Too bad. You know, so we, the richer in the northern climes, benefit. Diseases spreading because of changes, zoonotic diseases popping out because of stress on animal populations, people dying of diseases, that's going to happen much more in the poorer countries. Too bad for them. And likewise, this transfer of wealth is also happening more extremely because that's the situation, that's the economic model that we have set up. We give money to the extremely rich, and more so than ever, especially all these years past Reagan. And the number to call, 503-231-8187, and Ken is on the air.
Good morning. As always, it's a great program. I don't know if you want to go back to talking about Hillary, but
no, go ahead.
She's got a lot of skeletons in the closet there. But having difficulty understanding, Teresa, is she was using an unsecured computer, transmitting what apparently were top secret information, and it hasn't. It just seems to have dropped right out of the mainstream media concern.
Well, that affects the narrative that she is uber competent, so I would use that to say, well, maybe she's not so very competent. That's not the thing that grabs my attention as much as her misadventures in the Ukraine. Whoops, I'm supposed to say Ukraine, not the Ukraine.
I must disagree with you. I mean, there are many examples of people prior to her using this unsecured. Not only that, but she signed an agreement when she became Secretary of State that she'd only use a government computer.
So you're saying that this shows her as less competent? Is that the point?
No, it's not a question of competence. It's a question of Jeffrey Sterling was on the interviewed the other day, and he's doing 3.5 years in prison for theoretically for exposing an agent in the field when he spoke with James Eisen.
So she could have exposed an agent, is what you're saying. I have run out of time, and so I'm sorry to cut that short, but there you have it. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Coming up, Air Cascadia. And more programming on, I believe it's Air Cascadia. Yes, I'm getting the nod. Air Cascadia is coming up. And we go out to you via 90.7 and other frequencies in Cascadia and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Yeah, Air Cascadia coming up next on The Boo, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. We're about 15 minutes away from kicking off Flashpoints. That today features part two of a speech given recently by radical economist Richard Wolff. And the Electronic Intifada returns with its latest podcast, hosted by Nora Barrows-Friedman. At 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with Diane Lebeck about her new novel, Breaking Wild. The story features two strong women characters, one lost in the woods of Colorado and the other obsessed with finding her. And at 11:30, the film show features Ethiopian director Yared Zelecki, whose film Lamb is featured at the Cascade Festival of African Films. Festival coordinator Rana Neuenschwander provides a preview of the event. And filmmakers Lara Gallagher and Don Jones-Redstone preview this year's POW Fest, where their films American Gladiators and Sista in the Brotherhood will be featured. Coming up next, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Stick around, that is up next on KBOO. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor In a Time of Extinctions, a call to life Saturday, February 27th, 7 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church in Portland. In a Time of Extinctions, a call to life is a benefit concert for 350 PDX, the local chapter of 350.org. The concert will feature vocalist Kathleen Dean Moore and concert pianist Rochelle McKay performing a program of words and music. Again, that's In a Time of Extinctions, a call to life Saturday, February 27th.